December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
History, through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Thousands gathered on the island of Oahu on December 7th, 2016 to mark the 75th anniversary of that date which has lived in infamy. A day that left devastation and destruction, but also stirred in America a resolve and determination that would eventually defeat tyrannical forces and truly change the world. We're going to reflect on that day in this special edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this amazing country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are seemingly ordinary Americans around you who have endured extraordinary circumstances on our behalf. They don't want to call themselves heroes, but we can certainly take stock of what they did and what they went through and decide that our veterans deserve our unending gratitude for their service and sacrifice. We don't want to lose sight of the price that has been paid for our freedom. And as we listen to their memories, we are educated, entertained, and yes, inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Usually we spend the entire hour listening to one veteran's story from start to finish, but this time, since we've been joined over the years by dozens who were there on Oahu on December 7th, 1941, we're going to get a composite, a mosaic of perspectives on how these young people from all over America experienced that fateful Sunday morning. Some of the voices you'll hear are still with us, and we're even there at Pearl Harbor to mark the 75th anniversary. Others have left us and reunited with their friends among the 2,400 Americans who perished in that surprise attack. Hawaii wasn't a state yet in 1941, and most Americans had never heard of Pearl Harbor. But they received details and exhortation from President Franklin Delano Roosevelt in one of the most legendary speeches of all time, heard just like this over the radio in every corner of our country on December 8, 1941.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas, between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. Last night, the Japanese attacked Wake Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense, but always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. Interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God.
It would take the better part of 4 years at the cost of over 406,000 American lives, but that triumph did prove inevitable, and that rallying cry of the day, "Remember Pearl Harbor," is one that sticks with us today. But what is it that we're remembering, and why? No one can better illustrate that than those who were there that day, and we'll start with a man I met at the USS Arizona Memorial in Hawaii years ago. Al Rodriguez grew up in Hawaii. You may have seen him in some of the television coverage of the 75th anniversary remembrance. And here's what he remembers about that Sunday morning three quarters of a century ago.
Well, that morning I was stationed at the naval facility called Section Base Bishop's Point, which is at the mouth or the entrance to Pearl Harbor. I just happened to have the duty that morning at the 48 watch, and at about 6:30 we got word that one of our destroyers, the USS Ward, was dropping depth charges on an unidentified submarine. And the message came to our base, and the quartermaster on deck says, "Hey, we got a problem here." And he told me what had happened. At 7:45, I got relieved from my duties and went to have breakfast. I had just sat my tray down when we heard a lot of explosions. And then all of a sudden, the general alarm sounded. We all ran out to the armory where they issued us 30 caliber rifles or 45 pistols when they ran out. And that's all we had to shoot at the planes with. But of course, 1941, the planes were slower than they are today, and they were flying low enough where you could see the pilots' faces. I'm sure we hit the planes because there were enough of us shooting at them. The planes were low enough where, as I said, you could see the pilots' faces.
So you were firing a 45 at the Japanese pilots?
I had a 30 caliber rifle. You know, that was a one-shot thing. You you cocked them after every shot, so you didn't fire much. You fired enough, however, because there were enough planes coming down. But like I say, that's all we had to protect us.
How soon did you realize, boy, this is huge, this is enormous, this is catastrophic? Did it sink in right away, or did it take a while?
It sunk pretty fast, because, you know, especially when, you know, I was a storekeeper, and when one of the officers came along, he took my gun away. He said, "You get in that warehouse and open that warehouse for any supplies that people needed." And I was really scared. And some of the bullets, you see, we're right next to Hickam Air Force Base, and they were strafing the planes on the airfield, and a couple of bullets came right through the roof of our, we had a tin roof, and that scared the heck out of me. It lasted for 2 hours, and it seemed like 2 days. You really don't have time to think. You're just acting. It really scared me.
For the nation, Pearl Harbor became such a rallying cry. Remember Pearl Harbor was really what everyone got behind and motivated them to fight the enemy. What about for you, having experienced and seen that devastation firsthand on December 7th? Is that something that kind of stuck in your mind as you went out to fight the Japanese in the Pacific?
It always did. It always will. That's why I enjoy coming here to tell my story to the people who visit us.
Al Rodriguez was doing that 7 years ago when I met him there at Pearl Harbor, and he still goes there to tell his story today at the age of 96. And he mentioned that his Navy outpost was near Hickam Field. That new air base is where Ed Hall was on December 7th, 1941. The South Carolina native was getting breakfast ready in a mess hall and passed off the first explosion he heard as an air compressor firing up. The next one was unmistakable.
And then I heard the darndest explosion you'd ever want to hear in your life. Now I thought something blew up outside. I ran to the back door, looked up Hangar Avenue. Hangars 7 and 9 had blown up and debris was flying everywhere. And I thought, my God, an airplane exploded in one of the hangars? And then about that time, Hangar 2 and 4 was right across the street from me. The entrance was in line with the door where I was standing. Guys were running out of the hangar, scattering all over everywhere. And then I saw puffs of asphalt kicking up. What the hey? And then I saw this plane coming across the runway the wrong way. Holy mackerel, who's this idiot? And then I realized that's gunfire. And this plane is coming right at me. And this guy is so low, he couldn't have been more than 25, 30 feet off the ground. But he had to pull up to miss the building and the electrical wires that were outside. That's what saved my life, because he was coming straight at me. As he flew over, I looked up. He was looking down at me, and I was looking up at him, and he had a big smile on his face. I mean, that's how close he was, that I could see him. So then I went running out, hollering for Alex, "Where is everybody?" Well, they had all disappeared. Oh, I got to tell you one other. As I turned around, before I could yell at Alex, I decided, I got to hide someplace. Oh, the kitchen sink. So I dived under the kitchen sink. And things seemed to quiet down just for a second or so, and that's when I got out, started yelling for Alex. And I ran outside, and now I'm still in awe. I'm staring out in the air and looking at all these planes flying around. And one guy reaches out from under the eave of a building, grabs me by the shoulder, curse me out, "You're going to get killed, get under here." And I didn't more than get under the eave of that building. Here comes another plane strafing, took off about 2 inches of that edge of that building, number two.
Second time your life was saved.
Second time. So now this is the Hickwood, the mess hall. I got to get down to the motor pool because I know they're going to need drivers. So I go down there, and I was told to take a truck and go up Hangar Avenue and do whatever I could to help out. Well, it always, even to this day, it seems a mystery to me how this happened. But as I got up near the hangars, it had exploded, which was right across the street was the big barracks. And the guy come running out, waving his hands, "Stop, stop, I need you, I need you." I said, "Who are you?" He said, "I'm a medic, we got wounded. We got to get him to the hospital." So that's what I did for the rest of the day. And then we took a load over to the hospital, came back over on Hangar Avenue, and went in between the hangars picking up wounded. I picked up one dead lieutenant, and he had a 45 automatic. I figured, well, his guts are spilled all over it. He don't need it. So I took his 45 and never cleaned that belt either. It still had blood on it the day I had to turn it in when I came back to the States. But I believe it was the second or could have been the third trip that we made. We got strafed again. The tires were shot out on the truck, and we had bullets come between him and myself through the cab that just missed both of us. Actually, we didn't realize that until we stopped and picked up another wounded. Well, we stopped when the tires went flat. Not to pick up a wounded, really, but there was wounded there. And as he got out and went to shut the door, he says, "My God, Ed, look at the holes in the roof." I looked at him, "My Lord, where the..." And then I realized the tires had been shot out, and these handgun bullets came through the roof of the cab, number three. Well, that was my three close calls for the day. So the rest of the next 2 or 3 hours, we were still roaming around looking for wounded. I couldn't tell you how many people we picked up that were wounded.
Are we talking like dozens?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, at least. And I believe I just knew these fellows. I can't say they were friends, but they were acquaintances. Leonard Beasley, Eugene Denson, and Robert Kelly. Now, Robert Kelly I knew real well. They were killed that day, those three. All three of them belonged to the 42nd Bomb Squadron.
Three of the 189 airmen killed at Hickam Field on December 7th, 1941. It's time for our first break, but when we come back, a man who was flying his bomber into Hickam Field that morning. By the time we're done, we'll have heard from 10 different men who witnessed that day that changed the world. Link to all their full-length original interviews at hometownheroesradio.com, and we'll be right back after this.